Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Phyllis melts down on Y&R, Thomas goes after Brooke on B&B, Lucy's backed into a corner on GH, and Clyde did it on Days. Stay tuned. Melody Akles, welcome.
Hey, hey.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Yo, yo, yo.
Well, because we were talking about it before the podcast, the bold and the beautiful. Mel, I know that the CBS soaps are near and dear to your heart. What did you think of Thomas and Brooke this week?
The bold and the beautiful, I'm not even going to lie, has been tough to get through these last couple of weeks. But this mess with Thomas and Brooke, Brooke showing up to the house and the Douglas is there and Thomas and Douglas are eating the apple and Thomas is peeling the apple with a pocket knife. If anybody has ever done that before, if those grandparents like I have, it's not a big deal. Like, who cares? He's like, what, 8? It's fine. Brooke was freaking out about it unnecessarily. And then here we go. Thomas started tearing into Brooke almost out of nowhere because I feel like he didn't let Steffi get into his head on this parent trap nonsense. So now he's all, I wish I would have known what my life would have turned out to be if you hadn't have been my mother and all this other stuff. And I was like, really? All this? Because you was eating the apple and Brooke just showed up. And like, now we got to go in. Now we got to cover her whole existence. I'm not saying she don't deserve it most of the time because she does. But I just felt like we was kind of going overboard with it. And then they started doing these flashes to Thomas and the knife and make it look like he's so threatening against Brooke. And the end of the scene comes. It was the most ridiculous editing. I was like, I don't know what this is, because I feel like I understand that the goal is to try and make it look like Thomas is going to possibly attack Brooke or he's threatening Brooke with the knife. But when they did that at the end, it took me completely out of it. I was like, I don't know what we was exactly trying to accomplish with this, but it wasn't it. And we need to try again.
Josh, what did you think?
It was like the folks in the editing room had made a gag reel and they accidentally put it in the show, because that back and forth between the knife and the side of Thomas's head, and it was all really weird.
And a super close up of Brooke, like,
and that bold music that's going on. it was all ridiculous, but at least, at the very least, if I'm going to try to pull a positive out, at least it wasn't Steffi and Thomas going after Brooke and parent trap and bullshit and all that kind of stuff. At least Brooke and Thomas aren't usually in scenes alone together, and it was something that didn't happen all week long. The thing is like, I was glad to see Brooke, when Thomas tried to make Brooke out to be such a horrible villain, it was glad to see Brooke go, did I make you kidnap folks? Did I make you think that Courtin was kidnapping? Did I make you, she didn't bring up that he abused Douglas during that storyline.
Sure did.
But that he went back, that at least they got Brooke to throw things in his face. I don't mind that conflict. And I don't mind the back and forth, and actually probably would have had much more positive things to say about it had that foolishness not happened at the end. I mean, spoiler alert, and it's in the spoiler article that's up on DC right now. Somebody calls the Child Protective Services
to the Forrester Mansion. The Forresters. They deserve it.
Well, I mean, every last one of them deserves it if you want to know the truth. But so CPS gets called, and Ridge thinks that Brooke is the one who did it, and Brooke says she didn't do it. And I hope that Brooke didn't do it and that it's somebody else. I don't know who it would be, because ain't nobody else in the house. But it's an interesting twist to have Child Protective Services called, which could force this into the court battle that I hope happens, because that's where I like the fact that Bill, the best part of the whole week was Bill, Wyatt, and Liam at lunch.
Yeah.
And the snark that went on between the three of them. That was the best part of it. But it also goes back to Bill being protective of Brooke and having spoken to Liam about going after Thomas in terms of custody. That could be interesting if they play it out. But otherwise, it really was wash, rinse, repeat, and the beautiful this week.
Are you guys looking forward to Denise Richards returning? She teased it on Instagram.
She ain't been there in like a year. And
that's why I'm asking if you're looking forward to it.
This is what I think, okay? And I don't know anything. I'm just saying this is what I think. I think they're getting ready to kill Quinn off screen. And Denise Richards is going to come back for Quinn's memorial service, funeral, whatever it is. That's what I think.
That's sort of logical, actually.
Yeah. It is logical. That would make sense because what other reason would she have? I mean, Flo ain't been in town in 2 years.
Right. So then they're going to have all of them come back. That's my theory.
Well, it's been more than a couple years since Nikki visited L.A., and she did this last week to confront Deacon and try and get the goods on Diane as Phyllis is melting down in Genoa City. Josh, what did you think of Nikki and Deacon before we get to Phyllis's melting down?
The young and the flashbacks. I loved those flashbacks. I loved every last bit of it. Ooh, Sean Kanan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amen.
Mercy.
Yep. Amen.
There was a time where he was, yeah.
Sean Kanan here to tell you he still is.
No, he still is. Now. He still is. But like all of us have our primes. Let's just put it that way. And there was a time when he in his prime was like top tier. He's still great, but not all. We all have primes and then we fade a little. Ooh.
What it really did, in terms of that, what it really did show glaringly is that they wrote Deacon as smooth and charismatic.
Not
and
sort of fumbling.
You just couldn't help yourself. And now he's kind of the goofy, like Scream type villain that trips over shit and that kind of stuff. But he's not really even a villain. He's like, I'm kind of trying to be a good guy, but I'm not. But
they had him discover Sheila's missing toe.
Yeah.
That's what he's been reduced
well,
to.
Yeah, that's true. The only time that I've seen the sort of sexy side of him is occasionally when Sheila tries to go in there, I see it. I see a flash of it. Like when she grabbed her, he grabbed her and brought her to him. Brought her to his face and in his lap, and I was like, "Oh, okay, there he is."
But that's because Sheila be giving him all them compliments, and he, you know, cocked that head to the side and be like, "All right, girl, keep playing."
It had been a minute since either of them had gotten some good. So that, I kind of like the two of them together. It kind of is intriguing to me. But with Nikki, I like that Nikki is remembering how Deacon is her weak point. And I liked that, and I hope that leads somewhere. I'm not really sure what she's discovered any more than what she already knew.
She's discovered that Diane was driving a Bentley and that there was a man in the back seat.
Oh, yeah.
In one of the seats. That's the big thing that the entire story that Nikki's visit is now pivoting on.
And we're going to see that person next week.
Mel, what did you think of Deacon and Nikki?
Well, back in the gap, I did used to like Deacon and Nikki because I always thought that they just had heat and, of course, Sean Kanan. So for me, it was nice to see those flashbacks of them, especially they had one of Nikki and she had this floor-length fur coat on. And I just was remembering the good old days of Nikki looking so glamorous. But I didn't mind the scenes. I always felt like Sean Kanan and Melody Thomas Scott had this really easy chemistry, so it's definitely still there, still flowing, and, you know, we learned a few more tidbits about Diane and the mystery man in the car, so on and so forth, so it wasn't bad. I was just like, I don't think this was the crossover. I felt like if this is 50 years of The Young and the Restless, I feel as though there is a better crossover waiting right there in the shadows.
Why are they so afraid to do the Sheila crossover? What
I
like,
don't
there has to be something.
This is the time to do it. This is the time to do it. Sheila is quote unquote dead to everybody. They don't know what to do. If you really was doing it right, they could have made it somebody found out Sheila was alive, so on and so forth, and what we gonna do? We got to call Lauren in Genoa City, because she the only one who can get the best of Sheila. That's what we should have done. But
I think that we're here. It seems like that if they were to do that, and we have talked about this the last couple weeks, last one podcast, that Bold and YNR would have to be committed to a longer term Sheila storyline that it doesn't seem like they're willing to be committed to, because you can't sort of halfway do this.
A year and some change doing the same thing.
I agree with you.
Why not make it interesting? And it's not like they're necessarily using Lauren over in Genoa City right now, or at least for the summer. So
Not make it interesting should be the title of the podcast, because I think that's been the whole issue with YNR for a long time.
I feel like the title of the podcast is going to be Foolishness, which is what was earlier. Before we move to Genoa City, Josh, who is the person that was in the Bentley with Diane?
Well, we know the actor is Trevor St. John.
I am all of a sudden visualizing Trevor St. John and Diane, and that is a very sexy, that's a very sexy visual.
Oh, I agree with you. And we know that Diane has been getting these text messages from some mysterious person saying that they've been holding off the editor of the newspaper. And it does seem if she was riding around in a Bentley that maybe he was a benefactor, maybe they had a relationship. So the idea of Trevor St. John coming in as somebody a little underhanded, but she also seems a little afraid of him or afraid of him coming to Genoa City because he could out her secrets. I love Trevor St. John. I feel like he's been missing off our screens for a decade.
He's sort of like Ted King. Ted King had been missing for a very long time, but the moment he returned, it just felt natural.
For those three episodes we saw him, it sure did.
Right, but what I'm saying is...
I know.
In Genoa City, Kyle and Summer gave their mothers an ultimatum in which if one of them acted up at work, both of them were going to be fired. This resulted in Diane doing something that made it so that she would resign, and Kyle and Summer then fired Phyllis, who is literally going through an unraveling, shall we say, as everything in her life is imploding. Mel, Phyllis this last week for me was like, oh, this is why I love Michelle Stafford as Phyllis. Very few people do unraveling as well as Michelle Stafford. What did you think of Phyllis versus Diane this last week?
I would say I do enjoy Phyllis versus Diane, the rivalry, because that goes way back 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So seeing them go back and forth these last few weeks or so has been really nice. But I will say that for me, personally, I just feel like Susan Walters is doing the brunt of the work here. But that doesn't go to say, because I did like the scene they had at Jabot earlier in the week, where they get into the argument, right? And
with Victor,
finally, that was good too.
See, okay. I thought that Victor, my favorite scene for Phyllis was the one at the party when Phyllis realizes that she was excluded and everybody else was there.
When she has, I like to say, her Daffy Duck moment, where she be bouncing all over the wall. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. If you ever seen the Looney Tunes, honey, she was Daffy Duck. She lost her mind. She was like, oh, she here too? And y'all didn't call me? I'm the mother of Brian. Ain't nobody called me? She had a moment.
It was a moment.
Yeah. Josh, what did you think of Phyllis versus Diane?
Yeah, I'm with Mel here. I just think Susan Walters needs hazard pay, because she holding that whole show up on her back. There's a difference to me in the way that Diane loses her shit and the way that Phyllis loses her shit. So when Diane lost her shit in Jabot's hallway and Jack walks in,
that was good.
That was good. I felt the fire in her. It didn't feel desperate. It felt like, bitch, you want to go? You want to fuck around and find out?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
And I like that Phyllis was like, there you go, because I've been waiting on you. I
there
like,
you
okay,
are.
That's good. Yeah.
Except anything Phyllis can do, Diane can do better.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I love about the way they're writing Diane is that it's nuanced, because I believe that her encounter with Victor and her encounter with Phyllis that Jack caught in Jabot after that meeting with Summer and Kyle did upset her. And she I think she is trying, but these bitches won't leave her alone. And so she's trying to, so fuck around and find out is about to happen. And so I like the scenes with Jack in the park, even though every time I go to that park, I'm like, that's where they buried JT. But we're going to forget about that.
Every time I see them leaves, I get mad.
Every time. And then you go to the party, and then Phyllis breaks down, and it just looks desperate.
But that's what Phyllis is.
I'm not saying it's bad, Luke. I'm just saying when I see Diane has control of her shit, and when she loses it, she quickly figures out how to gain it. That little the scene in the office where Summer and Kyle also fire Phyllis, and that look in Diane's eye where she said, ain't nobody like a tattletale. And then at the party, when Diane kind of shoots her that side eye when she walks in and is upset, like, look who here first. It was so good. I think the writers want us to root for Phyllis and Nikki because of Diane's history, but I can't. I have nothing for Phyllis and Nikki in this.
So
I am Team Diane.
Let me ask you this then, because Grazide is returning.
Yes.
And Grazide's Daniel and Phyllis always had a wonderful mother-son dynamic. Do you think that he might be able to save his mother from herself? What do you guys think?
I think he does, because Daniel has always had a really special and great way of reining Phyllis in, of saying, Ma, what are you doing? Don't do that. Come back to you. Come on back to reality. Come on here with us in Earth. And she listens to him. But it's true. Over the years, they just have this really good relationship, and he just has a good way of reining her in, of saying, no, calm down, stop that. And she'd be like, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do
well,
these things.
What's also interesting about this, and I want your opinion on Daniel and Grazide returning, Josh, but you know, we've got original recipe Phyllis, we've got Nikki, we've got Daniel, we've got Deacon. Who is the one person that's missing from all of this?
I feel like I should know this answer to this
you
question.
You should both know the answer to this.
Okay.
Who is the one person in all of this messiness that would just add that chef's kiss to the top of it?
Who is it, Luke? Tell us.
Amber Moore!
I thought you was going to say that.
Amber Moore! Amber and Deacon in Genoa City. Amber and Daniel in Genoa City. Nikki is visiting Deacon. Phyllis hated Amber. It all works. I need Amber more. I'm just saying.
She would add a messy layer.
Yeah, and if they can find a way to get Kevin back, I think I could be here for them.
Days of Our Lives is here to tell you that Kevin and Jenna are residing in Salem, and they are enjoying each other's company way too much.
On the contract.
Kevin and Jenna are wonderful in Salem. Josh.
I'm glad they can be wonderful somewhere, because it wasn't on the Young and the Restless.
Well, that's true.
Grazide, yes. First of all, I'm going to be superficial for a moment. He's just pretty.
He's always been pretty. Whether he's like messy hair, long hair pretty, or if it's short hair pretty, like he's always just been pretty.
I think I agree with Mel. I think that Phyllis is missing a bar of sanity, a bar of reality to bring her back, because there's nobody in Genoa City right now that she listens to. Like, she doesn't really listen to Summer, because Summer is always her baby.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't really think like that. But there's nobody really that's a talk to. The only one she had was Jack, and she ruined that. So she's kind of floating aimlessly. So it's actually, if he's coming back soon, then it's really paced well, because she's about to lose it. So if he's coming back in the next little bit, that would be a really nice balance before Phyllis just completely implodes.
Thoughts on Nate's sabotage and Victoria's insider stuff that Victor warned her about? I feel like this is... How do I put this? Well, I'll put it how I always put it. I feel like this is another instance in which Victoria is trying to do something big and powerful in a corporate storyline, but it only makes her look stupid. Mel, what'd you think?
You know what? I don't really like none of that. I don't. I didn't like... So I will say I like the conference call that Nate and Jill and Devon and all of them had, and, you know... Nate pretty much comes apart and so on and so forth. And he's like, I'm so mad, I'm gonna quit, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's soapy drama. That I can understand. You don't want to work there no more. You sick of Devon. He always putting you down. He don't let you do nothing you were supposed to do because he's still salty over everything that happened before. That's soapy, and I like that. The shit I didn't like was Nate going, well, I'm just gonna tell Victoria all the secrets about Chancellor going public, and that's gonna get back at them, and then maybe Victoria could buy the company. Why? Why would you do that? That's not even common sense. Because now you done put the bug in Newman's ear. And you know what they do over at Newman Enterprises. They don't do nothing but buy out the competition. They ain't got time for words. We ain't got time for fights. We're not doing all this. I'ma just buy you out and call it a day. So now everybody gonna lose because of your foolishness. Like,
what he didn't do? He didn't get it in writing.
No, he didn't. And then he wanted to go, he's gonna go back. So he could be a spy. I don't like none of that. I was like, this is so dumb. Like, get back to the family drama within the company. Okay, I can handle that. That's not so bad. But this mess, bringing in the Newmans and all, don't do that.
At first, I liked it but then I realized I was so starved for mess that I was just clinging on to the mess that was there because finally something was messy. But I agree with you. After I've sat with it and watched a few more episodes, I was like, okay, the drama's there with Imani, Devon, Nate, and then Lily being like, why are these fools trying me? Yeah. I like all of that. And Billy can go. But the family drama is really good there. And Imani versus Elena, and that's going to clearly be ending soon because whatever. But now they've just made Nate... Because I kind of think Devon's been almost unwatchable the last.
He has.
Oh, he has.
He's been unreasonable.
Nate is almost unwatchable.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry. Go.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's just that you at least rooted for Nate because you were like, why is Devon being like this? Devon ought to be stepping all over himself to be nice to Nate after he ruined his career. But Devon's being a jackass, but they're not letting him own him. Like, if he was over the top owning, look, I know everything, I would kind of buy it a little bit more, but he's just kind of being a snarky dick. But then Nate, I don't believe Nate would betray Lily.
Right.
I think Nate would, inside with Imani, fix Devon. But Nate going to Victoria... All this is just doing is proving Devon's going to, like, you can see the path to where Devon is right. It's drama. It's just the wrong drama.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm like, Nate, if you really think that after everything goes down, Victoria's going to be like, oh, welcome to Newman, that is never going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So you better get your little scrubs ready because you're going back to the hospital.
The only way that I could see that happening is if what they're trying to do is turn him into Victoria's Neil.
No.
I'm not saying that they should. I'm not saying they should, but sometimes that type of thing is the vision that people...
He's not Neil. There can never be another Neil.
What I was meaning by that is... Victor had Neil as someone who he trusted and who it was his confidant and who was almost always his ally, though not quite always. Victoria sort of needs something like that in a way, but Nick doesn't really qualify just because of their history. I was meaning it more in that standpoint. There can never be another Neil, but it's, you know how Victor has Michael as his consigliere from a legal standpoint, and before Neil's passing and before Neil went out on his own, like, Neil was Victor's trusted person. I feel like there would be potential for that dynamic for between Victoria and him, but maybe I'm just wrong.
They did set up a trusting relationship between the two of them when he was playing doctor for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the basis for why they had him go in. And she said she trusted him and yada, yada, yada. I mean, I see where you're going with it. I hope to God that's not where they're going with it. But that's I see what you're saying, because she doesn't have a talk to. She doesn't have, and he should be more than a talk to. Nicholas, I don't know what he's doing there at all.
Well,
I just don't understand.
Let me ask you something, Josh. Before Abigail was killed, did you know that Clyde wore vanilla cologne?
I didn't, nor did I need to know that. Nor do I know why everybody's nose is so strong in Salem.
Apparently, Clyde puts on vanilla-scented cologne the way teenager boys put on Axe body spray.
Well, and Nancy seems to like it. She's gonna. Clyde is our killer. And next week, if you've seen the promo.
The promo is fantastic.
Well, like, first and foremost,
the promo
is
one of the better promos that Days has had in a while.
Well, this is I believe we're on Peacock budget, because the new season promo, last week's promo, and this week's promo, they look more professional. They sound more professional. I don't know anything about the ins and outs of filmmaking or production. But they just seem lighter and crisper. I thought, that sounds like a primetime show. I was just impressed, absolutely. But that trailer definitely shows you how it shows that we're going to see Clyde's interaction with Abigail when he knifed her, and then we saw most of his interaction with Sonny when he knifed him from behind on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You know, Clyde's not a huge shock. I kind of do like that it took us a while to get there. But I'm waiting to see, because Ron is, and you mentioned this, Luke, we texted back and forth a bit, that Ron is logical. So there's a reason behind this. And I just don't remember what would be the motivation for this, but I'm curious to go back in, because Ron will take us back to some flashbacks. So I'm curious to see what the motivation was and what he was trying to keep secret, or what he was, because Clyde doesn't really do
well. And it's not like anybody left in Salem really had a connection to Ben either.
Well, besides Abigail, Clyde saves his own ass. I have no insider information about this. I am speculating.
Total speculating.
Yes, it's total speculation. I wonder if Clyde's going to end up dead and if EJ's going to kill him. So that it comes full circle that EJ kills Clyde when Clyde's goons were responsible for EJ's original quote-unquote death.
I would think that it would seem more likely that Chad does it, but...
Yeah, but Chad's not the sharpest tack.
That's why I think that it'd be more likely that he would do it. Yeah, EJ could do it, but that seems like a really long, delayed revenge plot, almost, after, like, all these years.
Yeah, but that whole plot of them being in prison together was the whole reason EJ didn't tell Chad what he knew about Clyde, which is what Chad originally thought got Abigail killed.
So, switching gears... to another thing that I didn't know. Did you know that Kristen went to law school while she was on the run as a nun? I'm joking,
Damn.
Of course. What did you think of Kristen versus Brady?
that's not my favorite part of the show. I like Chloe and Brady as a couple. I like that Chloe didn't sit back and let Kristen run amok in that courtroom, and she went to the judge, which is completely illegal. Ex parte
well,
judge.
Kristen is using all kinds of stuff that apparently nothing about Kristen's past can be used against her because she was pardoned.
Yeah, she was pardoned. So that's very true. It's all the slate is wiped clean. But it's I don't know. It is not my favorite part of the story. I'm more interested in where this moves along. I'm more interested in Stefan courting Chloe and where this is going. Where Kristen goes next? Because I do, as we discussed last week, or yeah, I think I mean Kristen to me is the new Stefano. There is no doubt about that. For me, and so I'm more interested in. I kind of wanted to get past this in order to see what's next, because it was not my favorite part of the show.
So, what was your favorite part of the show this week?
Katie to the damn McLean.
Okay.
Oh, Jennifer Rose taking the pills. She and Jack and Gwen are talking, and Jack leaves, and Gwen leaves with her, and then Jennifer Rose, like feats can't fail me now, gets to those pills on the fireplace behind Abigail's picture right as Gwen comes in. And then the Emmy work ensued. And then I texted Melody.
It's true.
And I said, you don't watch Days, but this is what I gave her the minute, tried to give her the minute and the second it started. It's like, this is what you need to watch, Katie McLean. I would love to hear what you have to say about that, and I'll chime in too.
Okay. So I watched this because Josh was like, you got to watch this. It's Katie McLean. So, of course, I went rushing to my Peacock app that you can get for $1.99.
This episode of Daytime Confidential, not sponsored by Peacock.
That you could get for $1.99, a limited time only per month, people. $20 could get you a whole month. Not that
a whole month, or a whole year.
A whole year.
I'm so sorry. $1.99 gets you a whole year. For $1.99 a month, $20 gets you a whole year. I'm just saying, if we were trying to keep our genre alive and we shamelessly plug things on this podcast, which we would never do. Anyways, yes, I did watch these scenes and I love them. I don't, you know, Days has not really been my thing. So I'll catch a scene here and there. Or a good YouTube 80s rabbit hole. But it was good to see this week because I got to see Katie McLean do work. And I miss her so much on my screen. I might have to peek in a little bit more. But to see those scenes of who's she playing? Jennifer Rose? Jennifer Rose and Jack and Gwen and, you know, Jennifer Rose is fiending for her pills. She trying to get them away. You know, Gwen is all, I really hope you're okay and you're getting help and so on and so forth. And they end up leaving, but Gwen forgot her purse. And Jennifer got the pills in her hand, honey. And that's when the fireworks went off. She told that girl, she said, you are a virus in my life. And you got to get out. I'm sick of this. You really think that you would win Jack in a war against me? Because, honey, let me tell you, he going to pick me every time. I said, whoop, two snaps. And then she told her, get the hell out of my house. I said, ah!
And is that even her house or is it Julie's?
I don't care who house that is, but she had to go. I knew that.
She had to go.
All that was so good. And it did remind me of Rosanna. I'm not going to lie. Like, I had Rosanna flashbacks. So I loved all that. I thought it was great. But when is it not great? It's Katie McLean. This is what she does.
The way that the writing and then Katie McLean's pacing of her getting angrier and angrier and more desperate at the same time, that the virus thing, I literally, and I know you probably did too, Mel, I went, woo, out loud when she said that. But then because Mel, what you don't know is the whole backstory here, which I won't go into a ton of, is that Gwen is the child Jack never knew he had. And so Gwen grew up thinking that Jack had just abandoned her. And so she's always been desperate for daddy's love and done all of the horrible things that she's done. out of retribution, but also because she loves him. So they're again sort of getting back to a good place, and Katie McClain knew exactly what would be the thing that would knock her down. And that, oh, you want to ever see your father again? He'll believe me. I'll make sure you never see him again. I was like, oh, yes, yes, yes. Drugged up Jennifer Rose. I love it.
My favorite part of Days this last week was Jenna and Kevin.
Was what?
Otherwise, my favorite part was Jenna and Kevin, otherwise known as Gwen
and Leo.
Them in that hotel room, for me, just sitting there, those two bouncing and playing off of each other, their banter, their processes of elimination, the betrayals. For me, that was just watching two actors who I've enjoyed as scene partners for a long time just sit there and basically play acting ping pong, and it's just a fun match to watch. And it was just almost comfort food for me, even though both of those characters are extremely new to Salem.
It is comfort food though, Luke, because when you watch a scene and you forget that the actors are saying dialogue, and it just feels like you're starting to question, is this ad-libbed or is this all dialogue or whatever? It's just so natural. It's just a pleasure to watch.
I sort of wish, though, that Leo was the one who figured out it was Clyde. And the only reason why I say that is Leo has been written as the manipulative sort of dunce who's too smart by half almost. He's always just a little too smart because he doesn't think things through, and his plot starts out, but then it always fails. It would have been sort of fun if he had accidentally figured out with actual proof that it was Clyde, instead of it being a combination of Chad, or basically being Chad.
You know, I can see that. I can see that.
But They've got to give Billy Flynn something to do, because without Abigail, he's had almost nothing to do.
Well, it's all
so
been
solving crimes when the Salem PD can't.
He's been the Oprah Winfrey of suspects, and you are the murderer, and you are the murderer, and you are the murderer. And finally, he's going to get it right because of Vanilla.
Well, speaking of murders, the hooker killer, on General Hospital.
Or Charles Hooker.
The hooker. Took out Brando.
With some venom on the end of the hook.
Which there wasn't venom on the hook when Ava was attacked. So is it one person or is it multiple? What are you thinking of this murder mystery that has now somehow, I don't get it, but apparently this is the Umbrella, involved Finn and his past? Because Finn has such an intriguing past, as we've learned over the years already.
Well, Retcon Hospital is and I'm sorry, I'm being snarky, but it's just maddening. I will say this about we'll start with the Port Charles hooker, that the story around the attacks is way more interesting than the attacks themselves. I think the ripples are way more interesting.
Oh yeah, like Sonny thinking that it's him and him trying to protect everybody, and Carly doesn't want to have anything to do with it, and Nina doesn't want to have anything to do with it, and his daughter doesn't want to have anything to do with his protection. Like, for me, I could care less. As long as Ava doesn't die, I could care less about the hooker himself or herself, whatever it is.
Don't worry about that. It's fine.
But the fear that he's put in people as the perceived target of the hooker shifts, I'm enjoying that element.
I agree with you. And I know we're probably going to disagree on this, but Sophia Mattson did work this week. And
here's the thing. I'm going to say this, and you're only going to hear this from me once.
Okay.
Because there are exceptions that prove the rule. I have not been a fan of her as an actress. I do not like the character. I would prefer that the character is gone. But Brando's death, she put in the fucking work.
Stunning.
And did it was like, in my mind, I'm watching this and I'm like, well, I could have had an entirely different opinion of you for the last how many years if this was the kind of stuff that had been put in the entire time. And then my next thought was, if this gets her an Emmy, I'm never going to get rid of Sasha. But to give her her credit, it was the best work of hers to date on this show. And this is coming from me, who does not like the character and wants the character gone.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked her a little bit more, a lot more than you have, Luke. But there's, I think that, yeah, I'm glad to hear that we agree on that, because when Portia came out of that room and told her that Brando was gone, and she collapsed onto that floor, and I believed every last tear. And then here comes La Watros to say, "What happened?" No, and she gets on the floor with Sophia Mattson, and it's like, oh, the two of them. I just thought, oh, I'm in soap heaven right now. Brando had a promising start when he just randomly slept with Molly, and that was a really kind of an interesting way to bring him on. But since then, he just kind of wandered around, and they really had, oddly, had the two of them in an isolated. It was really odd.
Listen, the hooker killer could take out Willow, Chase. He could take out Sasha.
What have they done to Chase?
I hate to break it to you, but this is how he's always been. Seeing
but now. But it's worse.
Is how it's always been. You guys are just looking past his beauty now.
Well, no. I liked him on the police force, but this whole "I want to be a singer" bullshit. The only good part of that was I get to see Selena Wu and her purring voice on my screen, and I just love her.
Listen, all I'm saying is the hooker better not kill Diane either, because they're Days of Our Lives.
Did you watch Friday's episode?
Right, but that's the thing. General Hospital ebbs and flows, and over the years, the one person who you could count on, regardless of whether the show was fantastic or whether the show was bad, and this predates Maura West's arrival, Diane, like Lucy, was always guaranteed to make you want to watch a scene regardless of what was going on. So, like, him targeting her, yeah, not happy.
Friday's episode either was an ending for her and Sonny and they're going to kill her off, or was a start of a reboot of her and Sonny and they're going to keep her alive. Like, there's a 1 or a 10 going on there.
Well, they have to keep her. They have to keep her. There are literally no other attorneys left in Port Charles now that Alexis has been disbarred. Like, Diana's literally the only attorney left.
I agree with you, but, I mean, maybe bringing somebody. I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything. There's not even a spoiler for that. But sure enough, looks like she's going to get attacked at the very least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why
it does clearly look like they're trying to red herring Dex, who I am strangely starting to find intriguing.
What would actually make this an interesting storyline, that if they did it, I would actually applaud them for this? If this was Michael.
Oh my God, it would be so wonderful.
If the hooker killer is Michael, that would be worth it. Because if you think about it, he's got a history with Ava. He's got a connection to Brando. In part because Brando's a relative, but also because he was he had familial connections with Sonny. And Sonny and Brando actually have a better dynamic, at least in the present, or did, than Michael does with his father. And Diane was Sonny's attorney for a very long time. Now, granted, she was also recently Michael's attorney, but maybe Diane found out something about Michael and put two and two together, and so he had to kill her or attempt to kill her.
They would have to have had Michael lose his shit, though. I mean, maybe they'll do that.
But is it necessarily... is it a big leap from Michael hiring somebody and trying to get... sabotage his father? Is it a big leap from that to him going insane?
No, storyline wise, it's not. However, historically with this show, Carly, Sonny, and their children never ever get long-term blame for anything.
But and Michael's already killed somebody, remember?
Well, he has a dick of death. Everybody that
well, no, but he went to prison.
Oh, yeah, he bashed Claudia Zakar.
Right, right. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the hooker is Michael.
I think it would be awesome if the hooker was Michael. It would be interesting. It would be a surprise. I think that would be awesome. I would love that. I do.
Or what if it was Willow? What if it was Willow?
Oh, Willow got the leukemia and is pregnant.
Well,
I don't know that we can attach hooker killer onto her as well.
It might be sort of fun, though.
It could be fun. However, and this I'm about to be. Jillian would say I'm being direct deposit like Michael is right. Michael does right now. But that killer is tall. Everybody who has been killed by that killer has looked up at them.
Chad Duhl like, is not short.
No, I just keep thinking about people talking about who different people like they're using Dex as a red herring and people are saying Esme. I'm like, these people are not that tall.
Well, you know who's also tall?
Who?
Jordan.
I thought that was a really interesting scene they had with her with that glove and that hook. I liked that. I thought it made me think for a second. Thought it was good.
That would bring a whole new element to Jordan, because has Port Charles ever had a chief of police as a serial killer before?
I don't think so. And they would be allowing a black woman to be messy. And I like that. I like the idea.
But if that was the case, in theory, she should be going after Portia, because Portia's her rival.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I don't think it's Jordan, but I will say this. They have ramped up Jordan versus Portia again, and I'm enjoying it.
I'll say this. Like, General Hospital has some flaws, but what I enjoy about what they're... How do I put this? If I'm going to compare Days of Our Lives and General Hospital... What I'm enjoying about General Hospital and their Who's the Killer is that it's making me think of a lot of people. Days of Our Lives, with Abigail being killed and so much focus being on Leo and you knowing that the odds of Leo doing it is slim, didn't really make me do a lot of speculation. So even though General Hospital has some problems, I'm enjoying the fun of speculation.
Yeah, no, I can see that. There's a pace to this. There's this is more of a serial killer storyline than what they had going on in Salem. But I can see the pacing definitely, because I don't know that I. This goes back to my beginning. I don't know that I care who this killer is, because I think the ripple effects are way more interesting, but I am speculating. I am taking time speculating, because it's, you know, it is something to think about. I like really, really fast. I really liked the Jordan, Portia and Finn scenes this week. I liked how they all discussed it. I liked how Finn and Portia were like, la la la, we don't know anything about people talking to the invader. What? No. And that they kind of played all boy about it, but then they really sort of buckled down and said, all right, we have to keep this between the three of us, let's start working. And I thought that was good.
What did you think of Lizzie Beth and
Lizzie Beth,
her memories,
this story that I feel like they keep throwing spaghetti against a wall because they don't know what they're doing? How do you not know what you do with Rebecca Herbst?
But there's supposedly some sort of connection now.
Yeah, so Rebecca Herbst, so Elizabeth has been seeing this woman at the bottom of the stairs that she thinks as a child she pushed down the stairs, and that she told this woman to stay away from her daddy. And then she had a memory and sketched the picture of the woman, and the picture of the woman turns out that it's Finn's ex-wife. Is that right? Finn's mother. Finn's mother?
Do not ask me.
It's Finn's mother.
Do not ask me. I am so, like, Finn, I've always struggled with Finn. So, like, me trying to understand any of his backstory when I'm still missing Rebecca Buttig as Hayden,
I know,
is very difficult.
It's Finn's mother. And that means that their family was on that island at the same time as the Webbers were, which means that Gregory Harrison was there, and Finn was probably there himself. And the implication being that Finn's mother may have been having an affair with Elizabeth's father.
Final thoughts, Mel?
We didn't talk about this on Young and the Restless, but I really liked the scenes with Sally and Adam this week where she ate his lunch and told him, "You don't get to tell me anything about myself anymore." I was like, it's about time, because that's what I've been waiting for you to do. That's my final thought.
My final thought is a question for Josh.
Yes, sir.
You wrote the spoilers.
Yes, sir.
You're loving yourself some Jennifer Rose.
I am.
Mike Horton is returning. What do you think of that?
Okay, I love the fact that Mike Horton's returning. I think it's just for a limited visit, but I think he's missing on screen. I think he should. I think him being on screen while Craig and Nancy are also around is it flips back to history, and that they're bringing him in right as Jennifer Rose is spiraling out of control.
Josh, the thing that I remember about Mike Horton, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't remember who he was with, but isn't he the one who was on the flying carpet?
He was. He was there that, with Carrie.
That is, like, whenever I think of Mike Horton, flying carpets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, does this mean he's returning to Salem from Agrabar?
No, they laid it down so good, they envisioned a carpet flying around the world. That's how good it was. Yeah, it was. That was ridiculous, but it is something you remember. You totally remember, absolutely. I don't know. I will just really quick. I have no idea why he's coming back. I have a I would wonder if Jennifer threatened Gwen and said, "You cannot tell Jack, or I'll do all these things to you." I wonder if she called Mike, because she tells Jennifer, "Remember, I did all this research about your family. You don't know all the things I know about your family." And I wonder if she's the one who calls Mike and he comes back into town, but she's spiraling. I have no idea. That is pure speculation.
Gwen and Mike could be hot.
Could be.
Your final thought, Josh?
My final thought is thank you, Susan Walters. That's my final thought.
On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kurt. Josh is at DrJoshua09. And Mel is at Melody Akles. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Said she was a virus.
Bye, y'all. Bye.